Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself a Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to our three-year anniversary of our Get Yourself the Job show. And before we get started with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search LLC. Without them, today's show would not be possible. So please do keep Markham Search in mind for all of your recruiting, staffing, and executive search needs throughout the United States. Today with us, we're super excited to have back in studio Rhonda Vettieri. Rhonda is a seasoned C-suite technology icon, two-time author, mentor, speaker, and corporate athlete. A passionate leader in technology across industries, Rhonda has lived and worked internationally in New York, Hong Kong, Singapore, London, Mumbai, and across India, and has also managed teams of more than 20,000 people and managed teams in over 162 countries. Rhonda is a change agent for digital transformation, who has led the way for growth with more than 23 mergers and acquisitions at companies. She has worked in global executive positions at Estee Lauder Companies, AIG, HP Enterprise Services, Barclays, Lehman, Bank One, JP Morgan Chase, CompuServe, UUNet, MCI, and WorldCom, to name a few. As an industry expert and influencer, Vettieri has been a keynote speaker and panelist at many conferences and events, including the World Economic Forum in Davos, WIT Women in Technology Connect, Microsoft Global CIO Summit, Dell EMC World, and the U.S. Vice President Candidate Debate. Rhonda has been recognized with for her leadership and influence, notably as a multi-year top 100 CIO, CTO, executive leader in STEM by STEM Connector. Grit and Grind is Vettieri's second book, and she is also the co-author of an HP special edition book, Enterprise Service Management for Dummies. An avid sports fan and real-world corporate athlete, Rhonda stays focused and sharp by competing in marathons, triathlons on a regular basis, over 70 events thus far, including triathlons, half marathons, marathons, Ironmans, and she recently ran 55 miles in the Serengeti as part of a Girls and Women's Empowerment fundraiser, the first women-only run of its kind. Thanks so much for joining us today, Rhonda.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be back with you on your anniversary.
I know. How special is this? I can't believe it was 3 years ago in April of 2016 that we did our first show.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Well, congratulations on your new book. And for those of you who might be tuning in via Facebook Live, if you want to show it to our listeners and our audience out there. So tell me, you know, I know we had you on the show last year, but before we get into some of the topics in the book, tell me what inspired you to write this book?
That's a great question, Jennifer. What inspired me were people in my life that asked, when is your next book? And talking, everyone kept asking, how do you grind it out every day? And it's been in the works for a while. I didn't tell my mom, my best friend, my husband, or anyone. I didn't tell anyone.
Really?
I did not want that pressure.
Wow.
So,
says the woman who does Ironmans and
have enough going on that once you put that, you just know it'll go out. And I released it on my mom's birthday, March the 5th, in honor of her.
Happy birthday to your mother.
Thank you, Jennifer. And it inspired me because I wanted to give back and, you know, share my soul around the world and show what it takes to get things done and go through life. And it's not targeted a specific audience or age group at all.
Really? So it's just, now is it equally relevant to men and women, or is it geared more towards women?
It's equally relevant, and it does not matter age or gender, which is one of the most popular questions I've gotten in the last 2 weeks. So great question. I like that.
Yeah. So tell me, what is the book about? What are the principles in the book about?
You know, it's the principles are about, and some of it folks might think it's common sense, but it's really not. Listening, being on time, receptive, communication. But it's not just about those aspects, about real life. So when you read this, it's about what does it take to grind it out and get your hands dirty, get into the details, And when you're in Korea and the DMZ missiles are going off, which I experienced, and that story is in there, how do you adapt? What do you do? And giving real life examples of just things that happened during the career that I had just never talked about, Jennifer. And when you take time to self-reflect and give folks lessons back, hopefully someone will learn something from all the years of expertise. That's my goal.
Yeah, I think it's really great. And I loved one of the points in there is about, have you asked your mentor to be your mentor? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I think folks go through life, Jennifer, and they think that they have this mentor, someone that's actually helping them, but they've never formalized it. And the most powerful words are, will you be my mentor? You have to ask. You can't assume that someone knows that you want, that one, they're helping you, mentoring. You might think you have a mentor in life or workplace, but you have to formalize it. And it's not a social hour. And folks, you'd be surprised. They don't ask. So I'm trying to get that word out because it's formalized. That's the only way you're going to have a cadence. Folks know when you call, when you email, you have a special relationship, you follow up, and you both have to get something out of it. It's not just, will you be my mentor to be my mentor? It's what is the purpose? It's very purposely driven.
Yeah, it's about having symbiosis. And it's so funny because to get to be a mentor, it sounds like, oh gosh, how could I ask for somebody who's so busy and prominent to be my mentor because I'm taking something from them? But in reality, you're giving something, because to be able to give somebody the gift of sharing knowledge, just like you're passing this knowledge on in your book, is really truly a gift. Because otherwise, if it sits in our heads all day long, all the wonderful experiences, stories we've had, things we've learned, there's no point to it if we can't share it.
Right, exactly. And then another reason to your original question, why'd you do it? I wanted to share. It was time to share. I'm at a point in my career where I want to give back. I know what good looks like. And thank you for reading that, all those companies, and taking nuggets from all those companies and put together what good looks like and really just give back to the world on what it takes.
Yeah. And so let's talk for a moment about business and how to be successful for any men, women listening out there, no matter where they're at in their careers. At some point or another, we're going to come across a speed bump, or we're going to think, I can't. It's kind of like that book from when you're a little kid. It's like the train, I think I can, I think I can. You know, you need somebody there just to kind of give you that little push up over the top of that hill where most of us would give up.
Right. Well, that happens daily to a lot of folks. And I have, you know, my assistant Shelly, who picks me up. You have people in your life that pick you up that when you fall, but you need that. You're going to have those. First off, I think it's important that folks know in life it's going to happen. It's normal.
And not to beat yourself up over it. I think that's so critical, because God forbid you lose a job, you get fired, you go through a divorce or a bad relationship. You take it personally and you think, I'm a bad person, I did something wrong. And then you don't allow your friends or your mentors or support network to support you with it.
Right. And it's okay. It's okay. And quite frankly, it should happen to everyone, right? A speed bump should happen, or it's not a normal life.
Yeah.
Because nothing's perfect in life.
Exactly. And it's those speed bumps that really help us challenge and reflect on who are we as human beings. If we just, you know, walk through life and every day is all sunshine, rainbows, and unicorns, we're not going to learn about our true selves and our true character until we're put to the test, just like your book, Grit and Grind.
Exactly. And that's all about being put to the test every day, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, that taking the job that no one else would want, and putting yourself, getting out of your comfort zone. And I think that's why I continue to push and give back, and showing that you need to do it. You need to take those uncomfortable moments. It's when you don't, and it's okay. Some folks like to be very stagnant, but to grow, I always say, if I'm not challenging someone 3 times a day, I'm not doing my job as a mentor or as a leader, and some folks as a friend too.
And I think one of the things I've learned in the last year or two for myself is learning how much pressure people can stand, because the amount of pressure that one person who you might work with can stand is very different than the amount of pressure the next person can stand. But the only place that exists is in a conversation. And if we don't clarify and say, hey, I just did that with one of my own team members last week, is I came down on him pretty hard. And I said, you know, I need your help. This wasn't accomplished. What was this, this, and that? And at the end of that day, I looked back at that day and I said, how could I have lived today better? And I realized that I think I exceeded his pressure level. And I checked in the next day and I said, was that pressure too high for you? And he said, you know what? It was a little bit higher than normal and it made me a little uncomfortable. And I said, great. Well, in order for us to work together and partner on this, mm-hmm. I need you to communicate that to me, because unless I'm reflecting every day, which hopefully I do, I can't always be a perfect barometer to know if I overdid it. And that's part of your job. For anybody who's out there perhaps tuning in and listening, is this process of communication and not being afraid to say what you need.
Absolutely. And folks go through life, and that's in here about communication. Kudos to you, Jennifer. That's a wonderful story, by the way. Wish most folks check themselves. And you're right. If we don't reflect, people are different, you know, areas of their life. They don't know what's going through someone's life at the moment. They could have had something happen. Everyone has something going on in their personal life, and it just might be an off day. You can't take the pressure. And as a leader, you need to understand those nonverbals and just going back and like what you did, circling back. That's so touching. And I'm sure he'll never forget that in his life. He won't forget that conversation. And to have a conversation and not being your device on today's world is so important. To put it away and to have the eye contact like we have, to be in person, to show up and to have conversations.
Well, another one that I love is, I think there's a story in the book, if you'd like to share it, about being on time and what might happen if perhaps you are not quite on time for a meeting.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for reading it. Yes, if you're not on time, very punctual, I will ask you to sing a nursery rhyme.
Sing a nursery. What's your favorite one to ask people to sing?
I'm a little teacup and act it out.
Now, how do people respond to that? Do they get a giggle? Do they get embarrassed?
It depends what industry it's been. It's been in different reactions. Some folks are like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, I'm not kidding you. And then the whole team's like, no, she's serious. And they'll talk about it. Don't be late to her meetings. It's not a joke. She's not kidding. Or if it's Christmas time, it'll be Jingle Bells or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But that humor and them being put on the spot, they'll never be late to another meeting. It's just the little tactics, because time is the most precious currency we have in the world today. And I think as humans with technology, being on time is so important. I talk about currency in here, 1,440 coins you have a day. How are you going to use them?
It's very true. And it's funny, because when we're talking about this concept of time and what you just said, there was one of my mentors years ago taught me about different stances that you can take in upsetting situations. So you might have mother, child, father, child, mm-hmm. playmate, sibling, admirer, admirer, professor, student. And so often for us as human beings, we go to reprimanding. You did this wrong, father, child, mother, child. Well, actually, science has proven that if you tell somebody they should do something or they need to do something, they'll automatically resist it. So by using your tactic, you're actually going for more of like kind of a playmate sibling. You're making it kind of fun, mm-hmm. and you're shifting the stance. And then you have a higher likelihood that instead of that person going, oh, I should or I shouldn't do that, it's going to resonate with them in a different way and give them opportunity to new action.
Right, exactly. And folks remember that no one likes to be reprimanded.
Yeah.
Even when we were children.
We can all remember those times where our parents or a teacher or we got in trouble. But if you bring a little bit of play and fun mm-hmm. to it, I think that there's something to be said for that, that can help to heal both parties, that it's creating respect, but also still saying, hey, here's what I need from you. I need this for us to be able to work together.
Exactly. And I think it's powerful, too, depending upon where you are in the world, you would do it differently about being on time.
So I have a thought for you. Sure. What are your thoughts on happiness? Is happiness something that is a way of being? Is it something that's earned? What is happiness to you?
Happiness is, I'm full of love and soul. Is it earned? I think people go around mindfully happy. Okay. Mindfully. It's not happy in life. You make it what you want. Knowing your own, what makes you happy is different. Someone might be gardening differently for wellness. That might make them happy versus, you know, swimming makes me happy, or being in the water. I think you need to understand, really dig deep in your heart to understand what makes you happy. Being with my friends and my family makes me happy. That might be a pressure point to some folks.
That's a good point.
And I think doing what you love, Jennifer, like you, what you love to do, in multifaceted makes me happy. Doing different things. So happiness is, you grow into that. I think what you find, what makes you happy as you go through life. For those folks that are starting your career out early, it's okay if you don't know right away.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully that book will teach folks. It's okay. You don't know.
Yeah. And what are some of the principles that you think could help people connect to happiness?
I think respecting others very quickly, no matter what culture, or respecting how you communicate is very important. Communication, just having a conversation.
And not sweeping it under the rug.
Sweeping it under the rug, Jennifer. So many folks think, oh, I think, or I send a text and it gets misinterpreted. A message sent is never a message received in email or text.
And so many upsets. Like you and I, right before the show went on, I had 10 emails stuck in my outbox because I hit capacity on my Outlook again, which happens once a day. And so there are probably 10 people waiting on emails who might think I'm not responding to them, when in reality, my Outlook server is full and it will not allow me to send any more emails at this moment.
Which is, as a technologist, I want to fix your problem.
You're
right,
like, let me at it.
But that's important, communication in real time. And it's okay, too, not to be instant on, to be present. I think being present is very, very an important aspect that folks need to be more being present in today's world.
So how could somebody practice being present? We hear about it as this kind of esoteric, pie in the sky, sort of one day, let's all try to be present. And then we get bombarded. We have our cell phones going off and we have our social networks going off and all these things and phone calls coming in and thoughts bombarding us. So how do you, as an executive, a C-level executive, stay present, especially when it counts?
First off, no laptops and meetings. Phones go away unless there's a technology issue. Lead by that example. Be very present. If there's something happening, a text will go off in a different tone. Socially is very interesting, Jennifer, because I think we all have those friends that are just in their phone and they're not looking up. Why are you with me if you want to be on your social media the whole time? Folks do know, even if come over to dinner, check your phones.
Yeah.
I think it's an important aspect, and just put it away. And you need time to yourself.
You know, I just had a fun idea that I experienced in a restaurant. I was in New York about 2 weeks ago at, I think it was 11 Park Madison, and they had this art exhibit. And so 11 Park Madison is one of the top 50 restaurants in the world. I was lucky enough to be eating there for a friend's birthday. And what happened was they had these boxes that were created by an artist, and the boxes were meant, and they gave you the option to put your cell phone in the box so that way you could fully be present and enjoy the meal. And I just thought, what a fun idea if you had like a colorful creative box in a boardroom, and you could give people the option, hey, put your phone in the box if it's really important, or if you're going out to dinner with a significant other, you could put that away.
Right, exactly. We have sometimes we put a crate out in the middle of a meeting or a box, and we all put the phones in. Now, you have to be careful which phone you get out from a security perspective, but that's interesting. And they have these little devices now for beds that you put your iPhone away during bedtime.
Oh, wow.
So that's a new invention that a lot of folks are doing, so the light doesn't go off in the middle of the night, wakes people up. And a lot of folks are doing that putting it in a different room. But I think being present is just try for a couple hours to put this away on a weekend and be present. Go for a workout without your phone. Put your music. I don't listen to music when I work out. I purposely don't have that phone, Jennifer.
Really?
My mind is present. That's my active meditation.
Wow.
Well-being. And I'm focused on whatever's on my mind. It might be strategizing for work. It might be personal, professional. But I am present in that workout, and I'm not looking at that phone. Think of how many times you're working out and someone's trying to ride the bike or walking on, and they're looking at their phone.
Yeah.
Why are you working out?
Yeah, it's pointless. And it's funny you bring that up, because there's a program that I mentor on Tuesday nights in Los Angeles. And I am so systematic about my schedule. I leave my office at about 5. I can get to right around the general area by 5:30. And then I have an hour till I mentor. And so I go and then I get a foot massage. And I do that for about 30 minutes. And I was telling one of the people who's mentoring me this, and she said, Jen, I know you. You do something else while you get the foot massage, don't you? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm typically listening to a book on tape or responding to emails. And she said, I challenge you. Mm-hmm. To actually just get a foot massage. And it was mind-blowing. I tried it for the first time last week. Best foot massage I've ever had in my life. Jack is my new best friend.
Oh, well, good, Jack. Keep it up. Because that's important that you have that time to yourself to think.
Yeah, but it's so funny. In our driven world, I think it's about finding that balance, because the higher you get in your career, the more you're expected to achieve and to do. And I feel guilty. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel guilty putting my phone down for 30 minutes, you know, when it's still business hours. But you have to give yourself that. Otherwise, you're not honoring yourself first.
Oh, absolutely. Even during the day, Shelley's scheduled time to think. And folks know I schedule time to think, and I encourage them on the team to schedule time to think.
I love that.
And you block it out. RV time, think time, bathroom time. Maybe we often don't need, it sounds crazy, but we don't have time to go to the restroom some days, and that's not healthy. But thinking, taking a pause, walking around, manage my walking around, just block it out.
Well, I love, I had read Steve Jobs' book a couple years ago, and as much people may be very polarized by that man, you know, one of the things that I loved that he did is he would walk and do meetings. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, I had to do a rather challenging review a couple years ago, and I decided to do the review while taking a walk. And by the time that review was done, my team member said that was the best review I'd ever had, even though it was challenging and I had to deliver some tough criticisms. And he said, can we please always do our future reviews this way? And it was great because by both of us just getting out and walking, we were able to innovate and create in the moment and just be present in nature as well. And it was great.
Right. And you're flowing, you're walking. The conversation was probably flowing, more free flowing than sitting at a table and
being adversarial and
right, exactly. And facing off to each other. So you're walking. There's a lot to say about the nonverbals and how the conversation goes and how we're looking at each other right now. We're present. Hopefully everyone can see that our phones aren't going off. And some folks have been on radio shows. You see phones going off, people texting.
Yeah, they're doing like three things. They're like, let me just text this meme of the great thing Rhonda just said. And you know what? You can always go back and listen to it and meme it later.
Exactly. And it's just, I think it's so important, Jennifer. A lot of folks being present, please work on that. I think the whole world needs to be work on that.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for us as human beings to connect with one another at a deeper level. I was just telling someone at a party this weekend about that old YouTube video that had a man and a woman who are walking down the street and they bump into each other at a corner, and she's lost and needs directions, and she asks him for directions, and he actually walks her there, and then it fast forwards through their whole life, and they wind up getting married, having children, having grandchildren, and then it fast forwards to the year of 2015 or whatever the year was the video came out, and they bump into each other with their iPhones, and they walk past and they never see each other again.
Oh, I just got the chills.
Isn't that amazing? I wish I could remember the name of that video, but if any of our listeners know it, please post it on the Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook, because I would love to reconnect it. That's such a profound video.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes. I mean, thank goodness. I'm going to date myself, Jennifer, so please forgive me. Thank goodness we didn't grow up with these phones. I honestly think as a leader, I'd probably be different.
Well,
it's a bridge. I'm a bridge because I was coming into technology. I was in technology as the BlackBerry, all that started. So I could see, I grew with it. And I learned, so I grew in life without it. And it's been an interesting journey. I would say if I was growing up with it now, I would be a different leader.
Yeah, we would be different people. And it's funny, it's one of my dreams to do a TED Talk. And I was applying to TEDx yesterday, and one of the subjects was youth issues. And I think one of the obstacles that I see running a recruiting company and helping people hire around the country, you see a lot of people who are coming into the marketplace right now who are dissatisfied and distraught and confused. What am I meant to do? And it's because I think that we give the youth of today so much. Here, have a smartphone. Here, have this. Let me take care of you. Let me give you this, that, and the other thing. But we don't give people a chance to figure out what would make them happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that having been in Nepal and built the school in Nepal, what I really noticed was that the youth and the local villagers that I met in Nepal were so happy, borderline ecstatic. They had nothing. They had no meat to eat. They were lucky if they had an egg with their breakfast and rice and lal, and yet they woke up every day with a smile on their face.
It's so interesting. In Africa, we were with the Maasai tribe and in the Tanzania, and they had never even seen this device before.
Wow.
And they were walking, the women were walking miles to get water every day,
exactly.
Jennifer. They're happy, to your point about happiness.
Yep.
They don't have these phones. They don't even know what it looks like. And I was just having this discussion last night with my best friend and my godchildren about they're at the age to get their phone, sixth grade, we're holding off. She's holding off. And I'm so happy Michelle is holding off. Because once you get this, we had the conversation, your life will never be the same.
And it's changed leadership, and it's changed across all positions. About 10 years ago, it was 10 or 11 years ago, I think 2008, which is when the iPhone was introduced. And of course, there were BlackBerries before that. But the way the smartphone has completely revolutionized us all being available. Like, for example, right before we went into the show, I had somebody getting a job offer, and I'm trying to print your bio out. And all of a sudden, it's like you're supposed to be reachable 24/7 on that device. And I think it's changed the way that we interact with one another and interact with the world. not necessarily in a healthier way.
Mm-hmm. And depending upon what industry you're working at or where you want to go, that could be a decision factor. Because there's different industries, I mean, retail versus finance or, you know, digital marketing. It's different demands on where you want your job. Nothing is cookie cutter.
So for somebody out there who's toying and they're like, gosh, you know, I totally resonate with what Rhonda and Jennifer are saying. You know, I'm frustrated. Mm-hmm. I'm overworked. Whether or not you're getting paid what you want, but you just feel like you're pulling your hair out. What would you suggest to somebody who's in that position?
I would say, do you like the company you work with? Do you like your leader? Because the number one reason people leave their job is their manager.
Okay.
Number one reason, if they don't like their manager, they're out the door. So loyalty is a lot in the company. Also, do they like what they're doing? If they do, I would go to their manager and talk to them. Just say, let's help me prioritize what's important. I'm being pulled in the demands. And there might be something underlying there. They might be frustrated they didn't get a promotion. They might be frustrated, oh, if I could just drop my child off at work, an extra half hour would make a difference in balancing. Because that might change their mental model. But have those discussions, because it's going to happen. And oftentimes, you don't even realize what that little indication is until you approach the conversation. So my advice is speak to your manager, ask for a mentor, formalize it.
Yes.
Outside the company. I think that's important. Always have someone outside the company, not just internally to your company. And know that's going to happen because that's normal.
Yeah, and I love what you said about if it's worth making it work. Like if on a scale of 1 to 10, you're at a level 10 of being miserable versus you're at a level 5 of being miserable. If you're somewhere between a 1 to a 5 as far as being happy, mildly happy, etc., talk to your manager. If it's really earth-shatteringly miserable, cannot bring yourself to go into work every day, yeah, you might need to make a change. But I love the idea that if you're relatively happy, see if there's a way to make it work. I see so many people who make unnecessary job moves. And now, of course, the most popular thing is boomeranging back. Mm. We're seeing so many people in companies who realize, oh my gosh, my manager was amazing, or the grass really wasn't greener. And now boomeranging has become a big phenomenon in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I don't believe in going backwards.
Yeah.
But you're right, because folks often say, oh my gosh, I didn't know what good looked like, or I didn't know how good I had until it's gone, that old saying.
Yep.
But depending upon, you know, how people skip through their career, my moves were deliberate, very, and I'm glad, because different experiences. But you're right, I have seen a lot of folks come back, and that's a tough discussion to have.
It is. And again, it's not right for everybody. I remember when I was very young, I used to say, oh gosh, you know, nobody ever wants to go backwards. And I think that the culture is shifting. I don't know why. I would have agreed with you 100%, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. But I think that because we're evolving as a society and our consciousness is evolving, I think it takes a certain level of humility to be able to go back and to say, I was wrong.
Mm, that's fair. If you want to say I was wrong, it depends on the circumstances. If they admit that.
So don't ever leave a job working for Rhonda because she won't take you back.
Well, Jerry actually came back. It was early on. It was a tough conversation. Yeah. But I also said, you can come back because you learned, and he admitted it. And that was 17 years ago, and he's been with me ever since through all my job changes.
It was funny. We just had somebody, too, who wanted to come back to our organization, but there wasn't an apology. And that was it. Had that person, the person was extremely good and very, very successful at what they had done, and they left, and then they asked to come back, but in nowhere in their request to come back was an apology or an acknowledgement of what was missing. And I would have loved to have worked with that person again. It was a bummer.
Mm. Does he know that, or she know that?
Well, yes, now they do.
That's good. At least they're getting coaching listening to this. I mean, that's important. It's common sense. Treat people how you want to be treated.
Yeah, I know, and it's... So tell me, because I know one of the other principles that you talk a lot about is this idea of bone deep confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about what that is and how that plays into the workplace.
Bone deep confidence, grinding, digging deep, going with your gut.
Yes.
I think a lot of folks, the intuition and gut, your radar goes off every day and you have a choice to make. Do I want to do this? Do I not? This is uncomfortable. Am I going to accept this? Having that confidence that you're doing the right thing. And going with your mind mindfully is very powerful. And knowing, Jennifer, when to say no is very powerful. That's what I mean by confidence. Saying no is very powerful. And every time you say no to something, I always say you're saying yes to something else.
Well, I think it all, to me personally, the no, it's all in the context of the no. Because one of the tricks that I teach job seekers, you want to avoid saying, no, I can't, no, I don't, no, I won't, no, I haven't. Because when you're doing that, you're putting yourself in an adversarial position with the other person. So I think it's kind of like that old improv technique, yes, and. So it's a fine line, because I think so many of us take on responsibilities and we spread ourselves too thin. And then there's this issue of wanting to be pleasing, wanting to be pleasing to our peers or to our boss or to our mentor or whoever it might be. And I think it's about finding that balance and line, like you said, saying, you know what, this isn't the right time. Let me give you a different resource for that. It's kind of like a yes and sort of a thing.
Right. Always propose a solution.
Yeah, I love that. It's so important, is that whenever my team comes to me as a leader, that's the thing, is that I am going to do whatever it takes to make this right. And I need to partner with you on this. And that looks like you coming to the table to me with two or three solutions, and I'm happy to come up with a fourth, but I need to know you did work on it first.
Exactly. So important. And I think that is, and then you start to build off that. You have that confidence and momentum going into the next time you need to do that.
Yes.
And you learn from that. So I think it's important.
So tell me, what was one of your other favorite stories from the book?
One of my other favorite stories, and I'm saying this, it's probably the first chapter, is when I was in India in my 20s, practically getting kidnapped in India from buying shoes. So just going in and not understanding the environment, being, you know, oh my gosh, as a girl, there's shoes coming down from the sky, and I'm buying these shoes, and, you know, $8 is, you know, goes a long way, and coming out of the store and, you know, being pulled and prodded and down the alley, and, you know, telling folks that. My godchildren were asking about it last night, because the book is easy to read, which I pride myself on. They were able to grasp that.
Wow.
And they're like, you know, my goddaughter's like, what happened to the shoes, Rhonda? I'm like, they're gone. But that sticks out in their minds. But that is in there. And my other one is getting back into the pool to do Ironmans, because I was swimming so much. And getting back into the pool was a big push for me, because I just love swimming, and it was just something that I got burnt out on, and I never wanted to swim or even go into the ocean. So I did that, and you have to do it for triathlons. It's a first set, swim, bike, run. So those are the stories to push yourself and get that confidence back.
And so tell me, what was the biggest takeaway for you with the shoe incident, with almost being kidnapped?
Learning. I still don't know self-defense very well. I probably shouldn't say that on the air, Jennifer, but I'm open and honest and transparency. I mean, I can defend myself, but learning to know your environment, learning to always look up. And I mean, I didn't have my device in my hand. My hands were filled.
Yeah.
There was nothing I can do. And knowing what's going on around you, because that was early on, and didn't understand what I was walking into. I was very naive early on.
Yeah, that's the thing, I think, is one of my dearest best girlfriends for like 20, 30 years is out of the country for the first time in her life right now in Japan. And I was like, okay, here are like the 401, because it's one thing if you go to Europe and a lot of things are in English, but if you go to Mumbai or you go to somewhere in Asia, you're up against completely different cultural norms. Very little is written in English, and you can really get yourself into a lot of trouble physically, financially, otherwise, if you don't know your surroundings, and at least go and prepare it. I think that would be the moral the story for me.
And that was in the book too. And that was over 20 years ago. Just go unprepared. And when you go on the paper, I mean, one, everyone listening should have their passport, whether you think you're mobile or not. Everyone should have an updated passport. You'd be surprised, Jennifer, when people aren't prepared. I often ask when I first go to team meetings, is your passport live and do you have 6 months? Because a lot of people think that their passport isn't even valid, but you have to have 6 months. And some folks don't even have a passport and been out of the country. And get mobile and get out of your comfort zone and get out of the U.S. I'm so happy that, and that's one of the other things in this book, are all life experience from around the world, not just, you know, focused on America.
Yeah, I think it puts things in perspective. I was very lucky that from an early age that my parents would take me down to Mexico, and it wasn't that far away, or to other parts of the world. And it just shifts your perspective. You know, here we are and we have our $3 lattes every day, or we have our this or our that. And what you don't realize is that in other parts of the world, some people live on $1 a day. And to them, that's actually a certain amount of wealth. And I think the perspective it gives you of traveling around the world, or even if you don't have the opportunity to travel, just getting to know people from other cultures, mm-hmm. it can really broaden you. And from a job hunting standpoint, I think that a lot of leaders, executives, people who are going to do hiring at companies, they value people who are open-minded and are able to see things in different ways. And that also can lead to new solutions as well.
Right. And when we're building out a team, we look for that different cultural mindset too. You don't want to hire someone that's a replicate of you. You want different folks. You want different thinking, where they've been, a whole thought diversity, leadership, different experiences.
Yeah, and diversity has become a huge hot point and a hot ticket item for a lot of people. Now it's arguable whether people are doing diversity for the sake of diversity or diversity for the sake of actually wanting to have a broadened perspective from the company culture perspective.
Right, exactly. And I believe on performance and results, and this whole diversity topic is an interesting one. We want to make sure the right person gets the right job.
Well, I love it. And I've said it before, is that there was somebody on the show a while back who had given me the example. I think it's in orchestras or a philharmonic where they now audition people blindly, where they're behind a screen and you can't actually tell. And I have no problem doing that with resumes. If that's where we're going from a diversity standpoint, is to make sure the best applicant, regardless of age, race, gender, any of that, gets hired. I would love that. I wish that we would go to that sort of a model. So long as the person has the right skills, is a team player, has a good attitude, then that might help us in a healthier way diversify.
Absolutely. Think of the voice, what they do.
Oh,
they
love it.
They turn around their chairs. They don't see the person. They're actually present. They're listening. They don't care what the person looks like. Think of that in the resume, in the work environment.
Yeah, I think that there is something to be said for that. And I've said it before, one of my dear friends had a name that sounded a little bit different. I won't say her name on air for privacy sake, but she actually changed her first and her last name. She got married and took on her husband's name. And even though she had an MBA before doing that, she would send out 100 resumes and maybe get one response. And the moment she changed her name to a more American sounding name, she would get 50 out of 100 people that would respond. And it's really unfortunate that we're still faced with that in 2019.
Very unfortunate. Very. We should do something about that,
Jennifer. I know. You and I. Let's do it. And everybody out there who's listening in, let's find a solution. So tell me, Rhonda, I know we've covered a lot of topics. Are there any points that I haven't asked you about that you would love our listeners to walk away from today's show with in the book?
I would say that know that you're going to be uncomfortable is okay. Be mobile. Take those hard decisions. Know what works for you. And in the book, please know these are all life stories and everything is real, everything. And, you know, a lot of folks have read it and go, I didn't know that about you. I'm like, I know, because I don't talk about it. It's hard when you're self-reflecting. And this is about change and not, it's about everything in life. It's business leadership. It's gritting and grinding it out. And I think I love that because we work so hard, Jennifer. And talk about balance, multifaceted. And everything has a purpose. And actually in the book, I've thanked a lot of folks. Thanked a lot of folks. I didn't even know that they were, I've gotten messages saying, I can't believe my name's in here. And you know what? Don't waste time on, you know, negative energy or people.
Agreed.
I think that's important that you get, that we didn't cover, that's in the book, and learn when to purge very quickly. And you'll learn that through your career and where you are in life. And it talks about that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's so important, is to understand gratitude. Like gratitude, no matter what your circumstance is, no matter where you're at financially, personally, professionally, if you can connect in that moment to finding one thing to be grateful for. One of my mentors said, every night before you go to bed, if you can write three things, and even if three is a lot, just come up with one and just write it on your iPhone or write it on a little gratitude sheet of paper before you go to bed every night, it will completely and utterly shift your perspective of the world. Mm-hmm. And like you said, knowing, you know, we all have tough things happen, but if you actually see what it's like to be around people who complain a lot and who are emotional vampires and draining you mentally and physically, you really have to honor yourself, but you're the only one who has a say in whether or not you want those people in your life.
Right. Don't let them hijack your feelings is in here.
Oh, I love that. That's brilliant. Don't let them hijack your feelings.
It's in there because grinding it out, you know, a lot of folks are being put in positions that, you know, don't sacrifice your moral compass. That's in here as well. So I think that just don't let people hijack your, and you'll know that when you're grinding it out. You'll know that in your gut.
Yeah, and then that is above and beyond all else is learning to listen to your intuition. And it takes having that time, the 30 minutes you said that, you know, mm-hmm. Shelley puts into your schedule every day, of giving yourself that time, just kind of that quiet time where you're not trying to get out 20 emails or respond to things.
And get your foot massage, Jennifer.
Yes, it's all about that. And be present during the foot massage. That was the most important thing, because then you'll meet your Jack.
Exactly, Jack. Thank you.
Yes. Well, Rhonda, tell everybody, where can they find the book if you want to show the book again for the Facebook
Thank
Live
you,
listeners?
Jennifer. Grit and Grind. You can find it on Amazon. It's on the Apple Store as well. So Amazon, you can order it. Grit and Grind. And gritandgrindbook.com. It has its own website. I would love your feedback on Amazon. Any questions? You can find me at Rhonda M. Vetteri on Instagram, and you direct message me. I'm very open to communication, but I'm present. So, yes. I will respond, Jennifer.
You are very responsive, Rhonda. I've always been very impressed with how responsive
you.
You've been.
That means
since
a
we
lot.
Connected.
Thank you.
I mean it.
I know you do, and I love your energy, and that means a lot. Thank you, Jennifer. I try, right? The best you can do is.
The best you can do is show up. Show up and give it your best.
Exactly. People know that. They know that about.
And they notice it. They don't just know it, they notice it.
They do. And good people stick together, which is in that book too.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And when you find your tribe, connect to your tribe, honor your tribe. My girlfriends and I have a group. We call ourselves our unicorn tribe.
Oh, that's great. So we call ourselves a red tent tribe. Every day there's text messages going off. You have to ignore all those texts.
I know, we get like all of those. I was like, why am I getting 20 text messages the other night in New York? And I'm like, oh, it's my unicorn tribe.
Right. It's important, though, to have those teammates and your family members, because they're friends and family. You have to have your nucleus.
Exactly. And it's what helps hold you together when you do go through the tough times.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely, Deborah. So good to see you.
It's so good to see you, too. And thank you so much to everybody listening, anybody tuning in on Facebook Live. It's such a pleasure to be here with you today. And do remember, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can always go to latalkradio.com/getyourselfthejob. And at the bottom of the Get Yourself the Job page, you'll find the archive for today's show shortly after the show. It'll be available for download. Or if you're more of a fan of iTunes, you can also go on iTunes or go to the podcast section of iTunes and type in Get Yourself the Job. We invite you, subscribe, listen at your leisure, leave us any comments or feedback. We greatly appreciate it. And you can also leave us any comments or feedback and also interact with us on our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook. So thank you so much, Rhonda, for being here for our 3-year anniversary. And thank you to everybody out there who has made this show possible that we're still here 3 years later.
Thank you. I can't wait for the next anniversary.
I know. We'll have to have you back on the show. So thank you to everybody out there and wishing everyone a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.